All right. Let's have any specific questions that you may have.
Questions asked in advance, so to say. I can read. There are three questions.
Okay, go ahead. Just ask them one at a time.
First question.
Go ahead.
Sorry?
Go ahead.
The first question is, in previous Skype conference, you told us that mantras are not received in the disciplic succession, don't give the whole result, the whole fruit.
Correct.
Of the mantras.
Correct.
So, the question is, we receive kavachas in India, some, you know, capsules with mantras inside. Are they potent in any sense, these kavachas?
It's a good question. Are you translating?
Yes.
The answer would be, as I mentioned before, first of all, kavacha mantras should be mantras which are specially designed for protection. And they have to be received in a disciplic succession, and in a pure disciplic succession, obviously, in order to have any kind of effect. Generally, for instance, we see some of the kavachas in Srimad Bhagavatam. They're based on the names of the Lord. Particularly in Kali Yuga, chanting the holy names of the Lord is particularly potent. Aside from the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, which even that requires to be received in a disciplic succession, other types of Vedic mantras are even more strict. They have to be received and be given, actually, also. By given, I mean that the previous acharya has to give the permission or the empowerment for his disciple to be able to use such mantras for the purpose of kavacha. You can't just take it. Where kavachas are based on the names of the Lord, as much as the authenticity of chanting the names of the Lord is potent, that's where most of the potency will come from, not from particularly any other mystical thing. But you can put many, many kavachas all over yourself, but they won't be as powerful as chanting Hare Krishna, because of all the mantras. The Hare Krishna is called the Maha Mantra because it's the most powerful. And you can even begin to chant it without taking initiation. Whereas obviously other mantras, you need to be initiated, verbally hearing the other mantras before you can chant them. And then one should be a qualified Brahmin to receive those other mantras. So just in answer to the question, anyway, so in terms of directly answering that question,
yes.
The benefit of these kavacha mantras is whatever benefit one gets from having the name of the Lord present on one's body, unless they are fully authorized, as I mentioned earlier. Any questions about that?
Related to the topic.
Go ahead.
Shapagat, the benefits of chanting Hare Krishna by non-initiated.
The benefit is to purify the heart and make one qualified for initiation. When we chant Hare Krishna without initiation, we become free from anarthas and impurities in the heart. And that's the main benefit. But if one does not receive initiation and one does not accept the spiritual master, then most likely one can expect that one will not get love of God by continuing to chant Hare Krishna. Anything else in regards to that question?
Three questions more.
Простите, пожалуйста, сейчас...
Karuna Mai Mataji asks to explain what does it really mean our regulative principle, no gambling. Because some devotees interpret it too narrow, in narrow sense. She asks whether so-called deceit or avoiding taxes, paying the tax, are they included in the regulative principles of no gambling?
Not paying taxes.
Yeah, no paying taxes. Anti-trading.
Deceit and trading? You mean being dishonest?
Yeah, being dishonest. I have translated, okay.
Well, my question is, what have those two things even got to do with the regulative principles? In other words, why are they connected? Why are you discussing them in terms of the regulative principles? Why aren't they self-evident that you should pay taxes and be honest, whatever our regulative principles are?
The point is, some devotees think that they are devotees, so they can be dishonest and save money and to donate, save money for the purposes of Krishna consciousness. This is the problem.
Anyway, but my answer is still the same point, is that it has nothing to do with the regulative principles. It has to do with being a person, with being a devotee, is that devotees are honest and they pay taxes. It doesn't mean that all of the conduct of a devotee has to fit under the four regulative principles. Under which regulative principle will you put do not kill? It doesn't fit under any of the four regulative principles. Does that mean that devotees can go around killing people? And the answer is no, because it's understood that devotees should be acting like law-abiding people, like gentlemen, and therefore you don't need to tell everybody at the time of initiation that I'm not going to kill anybody. So although I don't take a vow at the time of initiation that I'm going to pay my taxes, or I'm not going to cheat other people, I should be at least purified enough at heart to know that a devotee, a Vaishnava, is honest. So a Vaishnava is a gentleman, so he should act like a gentleman and pay his taxes. You're getting benefit from the government. Why shouldn't you then also pay for the benefits that you get? Okay, next question.
Next question is...
Just because you're a devotee, you don't have rights to break laws. Devotees shouldn't misunderstand that just because they're a devotee for Krishna's service, they can end up doing anything. That may be correct as a principle. However, where does Krishna tell you not to pay your taxes? In other words, while it's true that a devotee can do anything for Krishna, but first, you have to show that Krishna actually wants you to do that thing. And therefore, making things up like this is just implicating Krishna in our own mental speculation, or it's another type of cheating.
Srimad Bhagavatam, in the very first chapter, Srila Prabhupada writes in his report, time is under the contamination of the three modes of material nature. It is 6.147, the beginning of purport. Time is under the contamination of the three modes of material nature. How can we understand this? Because the time is a manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can it be contaminated by gunas?
Just because she's quoting that, I'm not right now going to look at it, so I'm going to answer without knowing what the particular context is. Certainly, time is mixed with the material energy. In fact, it's the factor that mixes together modes of material nature along with pradan, mahatattva, in order to actually make bring creation about. So in order for creation to proceed, there has to be time, otherwise creation doesn't take place, because it's a progressive thing that goes on from the past to the present and on to the future. And so it's called the mixing factor of the creation. And as such, it has connection with the modes of material nature. Just like when you put a spoon into a mixture in order to mix it, it also becomes covered by what you've put in. So when you mix together different chemicals to create, form some kind of compound, then what you're mixing together with, it will also become coated. So same way, time also becomes coated with modes of nature. Of course, it being an energy of Krishna doesn't prevent anything from being contaminated by material energy. I say something being a potency of Krishna does not prevent it from being contaminated by material energy. Living entities are Krishna's potency, they become contaminated. Everything that you see is Krishna's potency, and it's contaminated. So only those things that are able, by either empowerment or by their own nature, to remain transcendental don't become contaminated by material energy. Is that okay?
Unknown devotee, he chants holy name of the Lord for 25 years already, and his mind still remains restless, and his japa is not attentive enough. So usually we know that quality of our chanting depends from our faith, and this person has strong faith in Srila Prabhupada and in holy name, but still nonetheless his mind remains restless, and his japa remains inattentive. What is the cause of such phenomenon, and what can he do to improve?
Well, if he has faith in Krishna's names, he should just continue chanting, having faith that ultimately the holy name will help him overcome his difficulty. Someone may have a very restless mind due to his past karma and past activities. Still, if we chant Hare Krishna with faith and determination, ultimately we will be able to overcome the restless mind. So Krishna says, abhyasena tukuntena vairagena grihyate. Just by constant practice, you have to be patient. So if you consider that sometimes sages chant mantras for tens of thousands of years in order to attain perfection, then why are we surprised that after 25 years we haven't gotten there? I think Brahma chanted Gayatri Mantra for 10,000 years in order to attain perfection. So in that mantra, not even full perfection, just partial perfection. So 25 years is not such a long time. And so we should just continue chanting. Devotees should just have faith and that the holy name will be merciful.
Guru Maharaj, in your class in New Vrindavan, you told that the Maha Mantra is not ordinary Vedic mantra.
Say that, I didn't hear what you said.
In your class in New Vrindavan recently, you told that Maha Mantra is not an ordinary Vedic mantra.
Right.
If Hare Krishna is not Vedic mantra, what kind of mantra it is?
But I explained that in the class. Okay. Anyway, I mentioned in the class that it's not Vedic, but it comes from, it is Vedic, but its source is not that it comes simply as a Vedic mantra, it comes directly from the spiritual world. The point that I was making was that there are many mantras in the Vedas, but chanting Hare Krishna is not one of these mantras that are just pronounced in the Vedas, but rather the Hare Krishna mantra is the song of ecstasy from the spiritual world. But because everything needs to have a proper scriptural basis, therefore that appears as the chanting, the festival of the chanting of Krishna's names appears as a mantra in the Vedas. But its origin is the Vedas, is the spiritual world, not the Vedas, although it comes through the Vedas. So in that sense, I'm saying that it's not Vedic. Is that okay? Anything else? Internet, he should not send any report, but if he writes a letter every 2-3 months, that's fine. However, I will not be able to reply to them until I'm reply to mail until I really finish with my book writing. But if you write every 2-3 months, then if it's just a report, it should be very. It should be just that. If it's to do with something very important, then you have to communicate that to me some other way. Now, if it's something important that I have to respond to, then devotees shouldn't put in letters because I may not immediately even read the letter. Okay?
Thank you very much, Guru Maharaj.
All right, so then we'll talk again next Tuesday at the same time. And then someone will inform Ramya, and then either she will translate or Vishwambar will try to get in touch by then, either one of the two. So I'm going to go to the temple for RTC, the deities. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.